good evening. Welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 91. This is Tom Harris in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, home of the world champions, the Chicago Blackhawks, who won the Stanley Cup this past week. So congratulations to the Blackhawks. It is funny, though, because when the Blackhawks weren't in the championship, nobody really seemed to give a crap about them. And now that they've won, of course, everybody is really excited. Anyway, not so beautiful at the moment. It's a bit chilly, and it's kind of overcast. Kind of had a little bit of rain on and off. But it was nice enough that I actually was able to hike home from work, and that was pretty good. Now, the show tonight, I really don't have much of an agenda for. But I just wanted to kind of throw out there that at some point in the next couple of weeks, I'm not sure whether it'll be next week's show or the show after that, is going to be a live show. And I'm not sure if that is going to be broadcast on United Kingdom Radio or whether I'll be broadcasting that on my own Ustream site, which is called Tom Harris USA. I'm still thinking about this because, you know, like I said in the previous show, I'm always trying to find ways to make the show more interesting, more interactive. And I was thinking that perhaps taking the show live for at least one episode just to give it a go. You know, you got to try everything once, right? And it will give all of you an opportunity to phone in. Now, the show that I do on Saturday mornings on United Kingdom Radio, Saturday morning, my time, be Saturday 4 to 5 in the afternoon, UK time, is definitely a more lighthearted show and very unstructured and kind of, you know, the callers really kind of set the course for the show. And I wanted to do something maybe a little bit more serious in a discussion format. And so I think it's worth a go, and I would have to prepare a full half hour worth of material just in case nobody calls. And of course, you know, that's always the trick, isn't it, is getting people to call the show. So keep an eye posted on the Facebook group. If you're not a member of the Tom Harris USA Facebook group, please feel free. It's called the Tom Harris USA Podcast Community, and you can join on Facebook. And, of course, if you know me personally, you can certainly add me as a friend on Facebook. I'm more than happy to add people, especially if I have some idea who you are. A lot of times I tend not to add kind of random folks who just show up out of the blue. That's sort of an effort to keep my Facebook friends more to people who I actually kind of know. Even if I don't know them real well, at least I know kind of who they are. And I think a lot of people have similar Facebook policies at that. But, you know me. I'm a friendly guy, and I don't mind chatting with anybody pretty much. So, pigeon update. As of today, as I just checked out the door right before I began recording the show, the pigeons are still there. There are two eggs. Now, the nest seems to have shifted a bit. It's no longer right in the middle of the stair. So either the pigeons have moved it or one of my neighbors has moved it, and the nest has kind of shifted over a little bit into the kind of the corner of the stair. It's still on the stair, and I think it's still a pretty dangerous place to have a nest, but for the moment it's there, and the pigeon is the mother pigeon is constantly there sitting on the eggs. There are two eggs. I saw them the other day as I was leaving the house. The mother got startled and flew off, and I was able to just kind of peek in there and see that there were two eggs sitting in there. I am still concerned about it because who knows? You know, one of my neighbors has apparently noticed that they're there as well because I noticed that they had put out some breadcrumbs and some water for them. So they actually are putting out food for the pigeons. Don't know how good an idea that is if we don't want pigeons nesting on our stairwell all year round. But hey, what do you do? So I've had my first piece of hate mail for the show. This is pretty exciting. And this is actually, I'm not going to read it out, because honestly, the person who wrote this would be more embarrassed by me reading it out than I was embarrassed by them sending it to me. But I suppose that it's just one of those things that when you're doing a show like mine, and you're talking about topics that some people are likely to have strong feelings about, like religion and that sort of thing, then you're gonna get some pushback eventually. And this is really kind of the first pushback that I've had. I have to say I'm not real impressed by the effort. Frankly, it's pretty juvenile. Now, I've always said on the show that if somebody disagrees with my positions, they're more than welcome to write to the show, write me an email, and criticize my position. if they're responding in a reasonable and not an abusive manner, you know, I'm not at all averse to airing their opinion and having a dialogue on the topic. I'm not afraid of that dialogue. I'm not a perfect human being. I don't claim to be, and I am certainly capable of changing my mind when confronted with compelling evidence to do so. If somebody believes that psychics do a world of good, which they don't, but if somebody believes they do, and they can support their position logically and without venom, then I invite that. Some time ago on this program, I addressed the point of perceived value. And this was a point that was brought up by Scott Mitchell from Scott Podcast, where he was talking about how there are a lot of people out there who think that the money that they spend on these so-called mediums and so forth is worth it. And we've discussed that on the program before. My position, of course, is that it's not worth it because they are being misled into believing that they're receiving something that they're not. But that's certainly a jumping point that could start discussion. If somebody would like to take that on and argue against my position, more than happy to have that. I do believe that certainly on this issue I'm right, but I am not so arrogant as to believe that I'm always right. I have certainly been mistaken a lot of times in my life. I could be mistaken about this, but calling me names isn't going to prove me wrong, if you understand what I'm saying. It just makes the name caller look like an idiot. If somebody has a logical argument as to why I'm wrong, bring it on. I'm more than happy to have that discussion. So when people send the sort of vitriolic, homophobic, childish email, you know, I'm not going to give that airtime. I tell you, you know, because if they're resorting to that, they've lost the argument. And they know they've lost the argument. Otherwise, they wouldn't resort to that. They can't disprove my position using facts, so they have to resort to threatening me and calling me names. And in this particular case, they were responding to the show that I did on Dennis Binks a couple shows ago. And this email is just full of homophobic insults and is just so incoherently written that I think it must have been written by a medium, because they seem to have taken it that personally. But nothing this guy said comes even close to disproving anything I said. Essentially, I'm just pointing out truths that this person just happens not to like. This emperor has no clothes, and I'm the one who's pointing that out. Insulting me isn't going to change these truths that this person doesn't like. I'm just the messenger. I'm that guy who stands there and says, "That guy's fucking naked." But I will say to the letter writer in question that I'm still going to challenge these ideas when the subject comes up. I've been debunking psychics since the 1970s. I've been talking about rationalist topics on this show for the last 91 episodes. I'm not about to stop now. If you want to be in denial, fine. If you don't like the show, don't listen. Period. That's just the way it goes. And I'm going to continue bringing these things up. If you've been listening to my show for any length of time, which I don't think you have, I think you'll see that I talk about a lot of other topics as well. This is not a show about psychics. It's not a show about mediums. In fact, I have a show coming up here that's going to be another travel-related show. I'm going to be talking a bit about that. And if you feel like you're so threatened by the ideas I'm bringing up, the arguments I'm bringing up, well, you're certainly welcome to debate me on the ideas. I'm certainly willing to read out well-reasoned, rational arguments from anybody out there. Send an email, send a voice clip. More than happy to play it on the show. But come on. And I'm speaking specifically to this email writer. If the best thing you can do to debunk my arguments against mediums and psychics and all that is to call me gay, then I've got nothing to worry about. The email address, if you want to agree or disagree with anything I say in the show, tom@tomharrisusa.com. Now, speaking of people who can argue intelligently and in a cogent manner, I do have an email here. This is coming from our good friend Scott Mitchell from the Scott Podcast. You can go hear his podcast, Uncommon Sense, and he's one of the Plain Dudes as well from Plain Dudes Radio. And you can go listen to his shows at scottpodcast.com. Now, Scott is actually bringing up a point here about the JREF Million Dollar Challenge, which I talked about a couple of episodes ago. And you see, he doesn't have to call me gay to make his point. Hello, Tom. Attached is an error on the JREF site. It is from the frequently asked questions in the Million Dollar Challenge. I wanted to know more on the specifics after your podcast. I'm surprised that they have this error there. Being so exacting and precise and scientific, I thought they would go over anything to do with this challenge with a fine-tooth comb as to not be embarrassed. I remember you once talking about this fellow, I forget his name, who promotes religion and intelligent design, I think. You took apart his thesis and talked about grammar errors. This is to show that he was not as smart as he claimed to be. How can we then let them know of this error? It looks bad for them. Oh, I was talking about Kent Hovind, and that was some time ago now, wasn't it? And the thing with Kent Hovind, and as you have to understand now, I looked at the error that you sent me. It is a grammatical error, a very minor one. It's a misplaced word. And I don't know what a priority this would be for JREF, but I am a member of the JREF forum, and I'll certainly send in a feedback, you know, telling them about this. And we'll see how important they consider this, because it's not actually part of any of the official paperwork as far as the $1 million challenge goes. It's actually just part of the frequently answered questions file. So I'm not really sure if that they would make that a priority. But the thing about Kent Hovind's thesis, and I point this out, it's supposed to be a doctoral thesis. This is supposed to be a document that would qualify him to put the letters PhD after his name and to claim that kind of a qualification. And I mean that as a doctor of religion or whatever the hell that his degree was supposed to be. I don't remember at this point. I'd have to go back and look at again. I'll probably listen to my show again. You know, I never go back and listen to my old shows, or very rarely. The thing with his thesis was that there were errors on virtually every page. It wasn't like it was well written at all. And there were a lot of pages that were actually almost verbatim duplicates of earlier pages in the document. So it's not even comparable to a one-word error in this frequently answered questions file. I'm just saying, this isn't a very big mistake. All right, so Scott goes on, and here's the argument he's making. In general, I agree with what JREF is trying to do here. Still, the preliminary test must be designed to satisfy JREF, but perhaps not the science community at large. I would feel better if they passed this duty to a third party that would represent science at large, but not JREF. Scott, I'd be very interested to know if there is an organization that can represent the science community at large, because the science community at large is a massive millions of people. And I don't know if you could find anybody who would be able to represent science at large. I guess that's really kind of my first point here. And the second point is that Randy, James Randy, who is the head of the foundation, actually, he's not the head of the foundation. I guess he's on the board of directors now. He doesn't actually run the day-to-day operations anymore at 86 or however old he is now. But, you know, he doesn't actually participate in any of these trials, in any of these preliminary tests or anything. And the reason why is because people do tend to get intimidated by his presence, because he's such a well-known character, and because he has such a reputation for debunking people like Uri Geller and the kung fu guy who was blowing on the pencils to make the move and claimed he was doing it with his mind. You know, because he is sort of this well-known person, he has nothing to do with these tests. These tests are done by members of JREF, but they aren't necessarily people who are on the board of directors of JREF. The most important thing with these protocols and the most important thing with these tests is that they be set up in a fair way. And what you're talking about here, about the tests being set up, well, the other thing that I need to point out here is that when you have somebody who is a claimant for the $1 million prize, they are asked to design their own tests. So they basically, the first question is, okay, what do you claim you can do? And how can you prove that in a way that would be acceptable to all parties involved? And it's not just one person who makes this decision. It's actually, I think it varies, you know, from test to test. I know a lot of these tests have taken place at the Amazing Meeting in Las Vegas. And this has to be agreed upon by all parties involved. So A, the test is designed by the claimant. Somebody claims, I can move a pencil with my mind. They simply have to come up with a test that would prove that they can move a pencil with their mind that eliminates the possibility of cheating. And I don't think that you need to be somebody from outside JREF to come up with an acceptable agreement. And, you know, all the parties have to be in complete agreement. Otherwise, the application process is terminated. This is actually the sentence that you pointed out the typo in. And, you know, and they say, okay, no foul. You know, you feel like pulling out, no worries. And the first question they ask them before they do this test is, do you feel that you can pass this test? Do you feel that this test is fair? And then they, you know, if they don't think it is, then they don't need to do it. It's not, you know, that much of a worry to JREF, certainly, if somebody decides not to go through with a challenge. Because a lot of the people who do these challenges, actually I would say most of the people who do these challenges, actually believe that they can pass their test. And they have designed this test in a way that is favorable to them passing it. So I'm going to reread that paragraph. In general, I agree with what JREF is trying to do here. Still, the preliminary test must be designed to satisfy JREF, but perhaps not the scientific community at large. I would feel better if they passed this duty to a third party that would represent science at large, but not JREF. This way, there would be no conflict of interest at all. Otherwise, the process is flawed by this conflict. Well, it is their $1 million. I do have to point that out, too. Why not set it up so an independent trustee for the prize would choose the experts that would then have to agree to the terms of the preliminary and final test? Well, that's because the claimant designs their own test. For this reason, I must give some validity to what the psychic you talked to on the show said. You asked why he did not go for the prize, and he said that no one could win it anyway. It was a stacked deck. I do not agree that it is all that bad, but there's a little stacking going on by JREF. If they remove this conflict of interest, it would be totally unstacked. Do you not agree? Well, I'm not convinced that it would make that much difference. I think that if you have a claimant, you know, some medium or something, I don't think that they would agree that that makes really any difference, because they're still going to be tested by a skeptic. And the only way that they can do their cold reading and tricks and things is if they control the environment. Still, I must say that I think JREF would probably be pretty darn fair. Yeah, I do too. I have always been impressed with Randy. I also doubt that much of anyone would be able to prove much ability. Well, so far nobody's been able to pass a preliminary test. What I wonder about is, what if somebody had an ability that was a gift, but was not 100%, but beat the odds? What if it were something that required inspiration? It would be like someone that creates great music or other forms of art. They cannot be put to the test on a timetable. It was more like pure inspiration or something else that is very human. We often have moments of pure inspiration. We cannot choose them. How would you prove this kind of talent? Well, I would argue, Scott, that sort of talent is not supernatural in nature. Certainly something like painting a picture or composing a piece of music, isn't that more a skill that has been cultivated? I think that you would have a really hard time considering that to be something supernatural. So why would you want to test it? I suppose they could claim to have a good track record, but it could take years to complete the preliminary test, let alone the actual test. That's why the testing is done the way it is. I wonder if anybody would want to be under that kind of process for so long a period. I certainly doubt that. It almost always causes catcalls and discontent from all sides that are sure to disrupt any artist or person with true talent. I have no idea how we could ever really test something like this, if in fact they do exist. I have my doubts, as I'm sure you do. Just some thoughts you're welcome to use on the podcast. Best regards, Scott Mitchell. Thank you very much, Scott. That's a good example of somebody making a cogent argument against my position without being abusive. Okay, so addressing this particular point that you made, Scott, I don't think that somebody who's creating art can really be tested in a quantifiable way. I think that certainly there are people out there who create art all the time on a deadline. It happens all the time. You know, John Williams, when he writes a movie score, is given a limited amount of time to do it in. Certainly somebody like a comic book artist, you know, they have a monthly deadline. Graphic artists have all sorts of deadlines. Speaking from my personal experience, actors have rehearsal periods of several weeks before a show opens. It's very, very possible to be creative and inspired within the confines of a time constraint. But I don't see that that's supernatural in nature. That's more a matter of training and practice and inborn talent, working at your craft. I mean, it certainly doesn't seem to me that it would be anything supernatural. It's not similar to, you know, something like dowsing or reading people's minds. It's not really the same kind of a talent. And I think that something like that would be just incredibly difficult to test. But I also think that if you get into a situation where you say, well, you know, I can summon an invisible unicorn, but I can only do it one time out of 10. I don't think that that would be an acceptable protocol for testing, in part because it has a built-in excuse for failure. And I don't know that JREF would be interested in doing repeated tests that turn out to be bogus. Either you can do it or you can't. Either you can summon a unicorn or you can't summon a unicorn. And if you actually think that you can summon a unicorn, and you really think you can do it, and you really think you have a shot at the prize, then you should probably be pretty darn sure that you can do this when the chips are down, don't you think? I mean, I do. You know, as far as, you know, changing the rules of the Million Dollar Challenge and that sort of thing, you know, these rules were hashed out over a long period of time by JREF. I mean, they've been offering a prize since the 60s, I believe. You know, that's really kind of up to them because it's their buck. But, you know, everybody I know who has tested it has always said, you know, going into the test, yes, this is a fair test. Yes, this is something that I designed myself. And yes, I believe under these conditions that I can pass this test. And that is really ultimately the agreement that matters. So, you know, I do stand in defense of JREF and the Million Dollar Challenge. And if people have doubts of the validity of the challenge, then they're certainly welcome not to take it. But I do see that, you know, people are using this as an excuse for their own failure. And so they're not even going to try because they know that if in a controlled scientific setting, they can't do the things they claim to be able to do. And their income is dependent on people being true believers. So it could be harmful to their income to be tested because they would be proven wrong and they would lose money. And there are certainly people out there who are criticizing me for saying such things. I mean, how dare I take a position against people being ripped off? How dare I? But the fact of the matter is, either they can do what they claim they can do, or they can't. And there's only one way to determine that, and that is by proper testing. So I guess that's my point there. Certainly with the psychics, if you can, you know, move a pencil with your mind, or if they can summon the shade of Abraham Lincoln and have a conversation with it, it should be simplicity itself to prove this stuff. Why aren't they doing it publicly? Why aren't they doing it in a forum where it's not possible to cheat? The only way that they'll demonstrate any of these so-called abilities at all are when they're in a situation that they control the environment. Now, why do you think that is? And I'm not pointing at anybody in particular when I ask that question. I'm just bringing up a point that needs to be answered if people who are claiming psychic abilities want to be taken seriously by anybody other than extremely gullible people. Is it because the skeptical energy might throw off the spirits? Or is it because they're faking it and they know they're faking it? Which is the more logical conclusion here? Because after all, if they could do the things they genuinely claim to be able to do, why can't they do it openly? Why can't they predict the weather for a living? Why can't they predict the stock markets for a living? Why can't they work for the fire department predicting fires? I bet the CIA would love to have real psychics on their team to find people like Osama bin Laden. And I've heard the argument, oh, well, you know, we can't use our gifts for financial gain. And I call bullshit on that. Because that's what they do. That's what their acts are all about. It's all about financial gain. All the books and the crystals and all the stuff they do. So that's a bogus argument right there. So, you know, I think that's a really good question that people who are kind of on the edge, and this is really who I do my show for now. It's not for people who are true believers in whoever, Derek Acora or Sylvia Brown or John Edward, or, you know, if you're a true believer in them, you're probably past reason anyway. But ask yourself why they can't demonstrate their abilities in public, in a testable way, a scientific way. And I think that secretly, deep down maybe, everybody knows the answer to that question. If these so-called psychics are the real thing, why do they have to resort to parlor tricks? If they can really talk to the dead, why do the dead always speak in riddles? Like, well, I'm getting the letter N, something about a broken leg. You know, why do they have to speak in these sort of fragmented, nonsensical ways? Why would they have to use cold reading techniques if what they had was a legitimate ability? And these are the questions that need to be asked, that need to be answered. And once again, you know, I'm just the messenger here. I'm the one who's pointing out the logical fallacies. I have nothing to gain. If every psychic goes out of business tomorrow, I gain nothing. But I've seen the harm that these people do, and the manipulation that goes on when they're trying to get their followers to do something. And I've seen how it affects families. I've talked about this on my show many times. And let's be honest, folks, if they were legit, if any of these psychics were legit, then nothing that I could say would upset them, because they would have the proof of the reality of their powers. So they wouldn't give a rat's ass about skeptics, because they could easily prove their abilities. And there's a million arguments that I could bring up. And that's really what it all comes down to. And there's going to be a few people out there who are supporters of these charlatans, these rip-off artists. Why the hell would you defend somebody who rips people off so shamelessly? And what kind of person does that make you? If anybody has the answer to that, they can certainly email the show. The email address is tom@tomharrisusa.com. So moving on to the next segment here. I've been forgetting to do this. I've been meaning to talk about a comic book movie. As you know, I've been doing reviews of comic book movies now for quite a while. And Pete and I saw a movie last month, and actually several weeks ago now. And the comic book movie in question is Kick-Ass. Now, I haven't read the Kick-Ass comic. I've leafed through it, the trade paperback, just kind of getting a look at it. But I actually saw the movie rather than read the graphic novel. And I have to say, you know, for what it is, the Kick-Ass movie is kind of, it's an escapist movie. There's nothing deep there. It's not anything that's really heavy. There's a lot of violence in it. That's something that I don't think would be suitable for young kids. And it is a very graphically violent movie. I do believe it's rated R for the violence, and as well it should be. Now, the whole idea of this film is based around this comic series by Mike Millar, who actually took this idea of why aren't there superheroes in the real world and kind of turned that into a story. So that was interesting. I think that's always an interesting idea jumping off. But I've noticed that in the past when I've seen stories like that, they haven't worked very well aesthetically, and that you definitely still need to apply a liberal amount of comic book logic to everything you do. Because if there were superheroes in the real world, it wouldn't be anything like Kick-Ass. You'd have people getting killed constantly, going out and trying to be a costumed hero. And obviously that's why people don't do it, other than, you know, showbiz types who are going out and doing this stuff. So it is rather interesting. I don't like Nicolas Cage in this movie. I know I've talked about him before in Ghost Rider, and I think I was sort of gave him some backhanded praise about my opinion in that film. I thought his take on Johnny Blaze was interesting. Not consistent with the original source material, but it was interesting nonetheless. And I did like him a little bit in Kick-Ass, but he doesn't look like the character that he's portraying. The character in the comic that he is portraying is a very different type. It's sort of this big, big burly guy. And that is not Nicolas Cage, obviously. I think anyone who's seen him in anything will know that. So overall, I have to give Kick-Ass a solid C as far as being escapist fun. It gets a decent mark. You know, it's not anything heavy, but definitely not for the kids folks. So if you have kids, I definitely wouldn't rent that movie to babysit them, you know, while you're off doing something else. So that is my review of Kick-Ass. And I do think that I'm going to have a review of The Incredible Hulk soon, but I haven't watched it yet. So you can look forward to that. I've got a couple of movies in my Netflix queue that are coming soon that I will, of course, review on the show, as I always do. Been a bit harder lately to find time to watch movies, though. Things have been crazy. All right, so that's about it for the show. I'm running out of time here. I'm down to about 45 seconds left. So thanks for listening. Once again, that do the live show on unitedkingdomradio.co.uk, and that is at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Central, which is 4 p.m. over in the UK. And you can listen at unitedkingdomradio.co.uk. And you can call into the show, and believe me, I hope you do, the Skype address for the show is United Kingdom Radio. All right, so thanks for listening. For everybody from Chicago, Illinois, this is Tom Harris signing off, and we'll see you next week.